COVID cases and hospitalizations are climbing again in this country, and they are surging in South Africa, where there are two new subvariants of Omicron. And around the world, vaccinations are lagging. Last year, the World Health Organization wanted to get 70% of the world's population vaccinated by this June. It will miss that deadline. Let's check in on the progress, or lack thereof, in the global vaccination effort with Dr. Krishna Udayakumar. He's founding director of the Duke Global Health Innovation Center. Doctor, welcome.
Hi, Scott. Good to be with you.
So I wonder if you can take us back to this goal, vaccinating 7 out of 10 people around the world. It was an ambitious goal. What was the thinking then?
Sure, you're right. It is an ambitious goal, but it's one that's really necessary and built from a principle of equity. And we know that new variants can emerge from anywhere and threaten all of us. So it really is imperative for COVID that we're able to increase both vaccination coverage, but also now to make sure that we're protecting the most vulnerable through third doses or boosters as well.
We've, of course, are falling short of the WHO's goal. What are the main reasons why? Is it a matter of demand or supply or funding? What's going on?
The goal, as you said, was 70% of every country by the middle of this year. So far, with only 2 months to go, only 52 countries have reached that goal, according to a report recently from the World Bank and the World Health Organization. There was an interim goal that said 40% of the population of every country should be vaccinated by the end of 2021. Still now, 69 countries haven't reached that milestone. And 21 countries haven't even gotten to 10% coverage. So it's not like we're close and we're just going to miss it by a month or two. For the first year or so, really the challenge was supply. It was a feat of really great science that we were able to develop vaccines so quickly. And we should be really proud that over 11 billion doses of vaccine have been delivered. But there have been incredible inequities. If you look at low-income countries, they've on average gotten about 10% of administered doses relative to high-income countries. And now that the supply situation, largely on a global basis, has worked itself out and we have a surplus, what we're seeing now is an underinvestment in the distribution, the delivery systems, and demand generation to make sure that we can continue to turn vaccines into vaccinations.
So help us understand some of this infrastructure that is still critically needed that isn't there. Is it trucks and refrigeration facilities and storage facilities? Is it the people to drive or get the word out? Is it information so that people know that there are doses coming to their towns? What is missing?
Yeah, I'd put them maybe broadly into three categories. The first is really political will. The second really is financing. So we are tens of billions of dollars behind on the money that's needed, not just at the global level, but at the national and local levels to roll out all of the things that are needed. And then the third thing is operational, the supply chain, the data systems, the people to vaccinate, the surveillance to make sure that we're able to monitor what's happening over time. The COVID-19 Global Vaccine Delivery Partnership is targeting the 34 countries that are in greatest need, that are the furthest behind. And it's difficult because the challenges are not the same across every country.
Is there a perception or a reality in parts of Africa that COVID actually hasn't been as deadly, as scary, as serious as we'd anticipated? And perhaps that is part of the reason for this complacency.
That is right. What we're seeing with more data coming through is that the exposure to COVID is likely much, much higher than is publicly reported across the continent of Africa. We have estimates if you look at seroprevalence, so the ability to see who's been exposed previously, that it may be as much as 800 million people across the continent of Africa that have been infected with COVID over the last couple of years. It may well be that the deaths caused by COVID are much higher than has been reported as well. And we've seen this around the world. If you look at the global number, we have about 6.2 million deaths which have been reported, which on its own is horrific. But if you look at the models, it's more likely that we're looking at 18 to 20 million deaths overall. So there is some perception about the role of COVID in Africa, but there's also the reality that the countries are trying to figure out how they balance competing priorities, that if we had all the resources that are needed, shouldn't really be competing priorities. And we should really also think about how not just to respond to an emergency, but how we shift this to a sustainable program over time that deals with the emergency right now with COVID, but that every dollar that's invested also helps to build the health systems of the future.
What are the risks to all of us of not reaching this goal of 7 out of 10 people around the world?
First and foremost, there's an enormous health and humanitarian challenge. We will be losing lives unnecessarily around the world. Secondly, our own health will not be fully protected. We should expect new variants to emerge. And we've really seen waves of COVID every 4 to 6 months. And there's no reason to think that's going to stop. So unless we really reduce the rates of infection drastically around the world, it's much more likely that we're going to see new variants in the future that may be either more transmissible or less susceptible to the vaccines that currently are protecting us. And third, we're losing economic activity. Our economic recovery will not be as strong in the U.S. Our health will not be as protected in the U.S. if we don't do more to protect everyone else around the world.
Dr. Krishna Udayakumar is founding director of the Duke Global Health Innovation Center. Dr. Udayakumar, thank you very much.
Thank you.